Have you ever felt that pang of disappointment when you couldn't add a ticket to your collection because it was digital? Or maybe you just lost it? Well, StubForge.com is here to change that. Imagine this: tickets that not only look but feel like the real deal. Because each ticket from StubForge is printed on the same quality stock that Ticketmaster uses and printed with genuine ticket printers. It's like holding a piece of the concert, the game, or the show right in your hands. But StubForge isn't just about replacing tickets. With the easy-to-use interactive designer, you can create custom tickets for anything, from concerts to sports games, pregnancy announcements, or parties. Why not make your invitations stand out with tickets that are as unique as your event? And if you're trying to complete a back catalogue of missing tickets, StubForge offers bulk discounts to make it both easy and affordable. With StubForge, you can once more give your loved ones physical tickets and see their eyes light up instantly at the best gift you can give. So whether you're looking to reignite your ticket collection, craft the perfect gift, or send the coolest invites, head over to StubForge.com. Start creating today and see how StubForge makes every ticket a story worth saving. Visit StubForge.com and start making tickets today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My next guest on the Bravery Academy today is Fiona Campbell. Fiona is an organisational psychologist with over 25 years' experience in executive coaching, leadership development, and organisational culture change. The wisdom she shares today is both from her lived experience as well as her work, and there are so many pearls of wisdom around how, as women and men, we can learn to heal, connect, and thrive through life. Welcome back to the Bravery Academy. I am thrilled to have a beautiful human inside and out, Fiona Campbell, joining me all the way from America. Welcome, Fi.
Oh, thank you. Lovely to be here. Thanks, Emma, for inviting me.
Well, I'm really excited to hear about your story. I know bits of it, but I think there is so much knowledge and wisdom from your experiences in life and your experience as an organizational psychologist. Is it 25 years now?
That's right. I know. Am I that old?
No, wisdom. Wisdom is what I'm seeing there. I think I want to dive into that today because there's so much that we can learn from your experiences. Before we start, can you tell me where you are from? Because I think there's a bit of a story to that. And also, where do you live now?
Yeah, no. So originally born in Zimbabwe and then grew up partly in South Africa, partly thanks to my intrepid explorer parents, not that my mom had a choice, but grew up on a boat across the Atlantic and then moved to England for most of my education and a big part of my career. So I was 40 and then moved to the Caribbean and now live in the mainland US.
So where do you call home?
That's a good question. I mean, home, I always say, is where your family are, where you make it. So home, therefore, is Louisville, Kentucky. That's where my kids and my husband, Justin, is where we live now. I feel like my ancestral roots lie in Africa. And my home and my heart, my soul, probably is the Caribbean, St. John.
Tell me about why you became an organizational psychologist.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was actually to understand my own family system and what I grew up with. So, you know, my father, due to his upbringing and the sort of the trauma that he experienced with alcoholic father and just neglect, meant he was very ill-equipped to be a parent, just didn't really have the tools, I think, you know, experiencing that and trying to make sense of it. And also the impact it had not only on me, but my brother. And his journey, it just, I just became very curious about psychology.
And where has that led you on the last 25 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, today I work in McKinsey. I work for a group that focused specifically on leadership transformation in organizations in McKinsey called Abakin. And I was at PwC for about 16 years. So that's where I really cut my teeth and understanding what makes leaders tick. How do we unlock the potential in each other? How do we bring our full gifts to life? And as leaders, how do we create the conditions for others to thrive? And so a lot of my work has been around executive coaching at a senior level now, also working with senior leadership teams to set the tone from the top and to manifest that, you know, that psychological safety that we're all craving for to bring our whole self to work. And I have the real privilege, to be honest, is working across many sectors. So whether it's humanitarian sector, whether it's all the way through to private equity and the hardcore finance.
That's a really diverse background. What has been the lessons in that around how do we thrive in leadership roles?
You know, I think we've definitely been on a journey. I would say where we are, I think the pandemic was a huge awakening for us and a huge wake-up call about what we are doing, how we spend our time, and how we neglect ourselves and our self-care and our sense of purpose. I think we've just been running at a rapid race, and it's to everyone's detriment, our kids, our communities, and ourselves and society. The pandemic, I think, gave us a chance to pause and to reflect and to appreciate that. I think it's also helped us pay attention to what are some of these systemic structures that have been put in place, especially capitalistic patriarchal structures, you know, that drive so much of our thinking and the way businesses run today, which is why I think there's a huge need for female leadership at senior levels, because we need to break down those structures in order to birth literally something new that's going to be more in service of us. So I think the pandemic was a big shift in helping us recognize that.
I know you spent some time in the Virgin Islands. Tell me about that and why that was so important for you to be there.
Yeah. So I mentioned, you know, having grown up on a boat, and my parents spent quite a lot of time from when I was age, was from 0 to 5. And then we did the trip again when I was 8, when we tried to immigrate to the States in the Caribbean. And to be honest, for a very long time, that was a part of my childhood that I just didn't have any real meaning. I think I was always out of school, or always at school, a new school, trying to make new friends. And I wanted to fit in desperately, right? And so having this quirky, I live on the boat type story, just like, no, I wanted to wear Madonna lace gloves and I wanted to be cool. And, you know, my friends all drove fancy cars and we lived in the boat. It's just like, that's not what I wanted to be part of my world. So I kind of just ignored it for a long time, rejected it probably a little bit. And then only when I began on a real search for meaning in my own life and around my 30s and thinking about where do I want to go with my career? What do I really want to be doing? And just, so there was a search. I want something else that then sparked. Let's revisit, you know, St. John. And there was also a trip. So there was a little bit of a trip with my dad. It was therapy in action, to be honest, where we sailed across the Atlantic. We had huge falling outs and it was pretty traumatic, but we reunited back in the Caribbean. The place holds it just holds actually deep healing and it holds real memories. And then when we were there, it all kind of came flooding back. And I said to my husband, well, what would it be like to move here? And, you know, he said, what, are you crazy? Like, this is a tiny island with 4,000 people. And what are you going to do? And I just thought, I don't know. I think, you know, if we just really pay attention, and I feel like I preach this all the time to my clients, pay attention to your values, pay attention to those voices, you know, that keep you awake at night about what you really want to be doing, what your soul is calling you to do. And then everything will flow from there. I think the voice got so loud, I couldn't shut it out. That's what made that shift for me. Because it's a hard thing just to give up your career and your job and throw it to the wind and buy a house unseen on an island in the middle of the Atlantic, you know.
Did you not see the house? You just literally brought it on a slight whim.
We had my husband's cousin go and visit. They're architects and builders. And they Skyped. We selected our top 10 online. They visited them all and then they Skyped at the top 3 and then we made a choice.
Move. So you've been the driver in that shift then. That was a driver for you to have that time and be on that island. The girls were young too, weren't they?
Yeah. So Ray was 6 months and Georgia was 3. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. And what did your time in St. John's teach you?
Oh, so much. If I joke, it taught me how to be a hippie and all of the beauty and the wisdom that comes from that, right? It taught me how to lean into community. I think that was probably the biggest lesson, especially after living a life in London that's so singular. You know, it's like you trying to get to a destination and push yourself forward in a career. And suddenly there's this whole community where we have to share parenting, sharing vegetables that we're growing, then homeschool. Okay, well, who's going to run a homeschool? What parents can teach what? Coming together to make it happen. And that was just incredible. And really appreciating that the gifts that people bring aren't obvious until you hear stories, until you get to know people. And so I just, I over-indexed, I think, on valuing the corporate world for way too long. And I got in touch with more of my whole self when I was on St. John. And then also my spiritual path. I think that really kicked in with meditation and women's circles that I still am a part of now. And it's just such an important part of my journey. I feel like the women in St. John really thrived the way they came together. And then learning so many Indigenous practices around plant medicine and just rituals and the healing powers of food and just, yeah, it was amazing.
So why did you leave?
Ah, the hurricane.
Tell me about that.
Hurricane Irma. So I'm glad I tell this story a lot because otherwise I'd start crying.
Yeah.
So Hurricane Irma came through in 2017 and she was the strongest hurricane on record coming across the Atlantic. And yeah, there were decisions to be made about do we stay or is it going to turn north or south or, you know, but the eye was heading towards the island. And so we made a decision where we lived in a wooden house just to basically bust down the hatches, literally, and to move into our friend's house for that period and just hoped and prayed that everything would be okay. The next day, you know, cutting down the trees with a machete, climbing over every single pylon that was down, like the island looked like a war zone. There wasn't a leaf on a tree. There were no trees. It was just desolate. And got to our house and it wasn't there anymore. And yeah, their kids' toys were hanging in the trees. I actually came across the roof before I even got to the house. And it was traumatic. It was deeply sad, you know, just seeing that. And it was less about the bricks and the mortar and the possessions. It was much more about what we felt we had created, you know, and manifested. It was our home. Is at home.
I love that you could be so open because this is also part of your resilience story that you share and how you came through that. Because I can't imagine the fear that must have been in that night when you were waiting to see with your children, being in that house. It's huge.
Yeah, no, it was. And, you know, it's also been part of our journey, right? And I remember afterwards just thinking, it's like, what? Why? You know, that's so. Why me? Why is this happening? I finally found home. I finally found somewhere where I want to be. The rug has been ripped out from under my feet. So there was a real victim kind of complex that was kicking in. And, you know, we're in Kentucky. I'm like, what the hell am I doing in Kentucky? I never want to come here. So it's my husband. Don't think we're ever going to move to Kentucky. And, you know, lo and behold. But I, you know, in that, it kind of came to me about I had been given a gift. I'd been given wisdom by being in St. John. There were huge lessons that were incredibly rich, and it was now mine to share. And I thought, that's something to take away.
So how did you recover from that?
Well, community was such a big deal there, and I needed to find community here. So I think I just did what I knew. And I think being a mother really helps, you know. So I think the third day we were here, I signed my kids up for ballet. And I just thought, well, that's, I need to meet other mums. And I sit and watch the classes and I'll meet mums, you know. And then I needed to connect to something also deeper. And so it was a refugee community. So I signed up actually to mentor refugees. Louisville is a bit of a sanctuary city. And just to support people who really had traumatic stories to tell. I mean, so putting it into perspective and just thinking, I've got agency, I've got privilege, I've got something to offer, and I've got empathy about what it's like to lose your home. Oh my gosh, I feel like the family that, you know, I still am connected to today and still, I mean, mentor, and they've given so much more to me than I feel like I've ever given to them. They're just amazing, amazing people. And also a big part of it was helping my kids, because they really, Georgia especially, really suffered. And yeah, she helped to art therapy afterwards to make sense of it, but to help them also not be victims or fear that the sky is going to fall down, because they would just say, is our roof safe? Is the roof safe? They didn't know when it was going to happen again, you know? So for a child to make sense of that, it's almost impossible. So we joined this group where we would just package up emergency needs. So it's these boxes and just send them, and the kids would go around and they'd choose, you know, they choose socks and they'd choose dried fruit. And so they were involved in packaging and putting together, and they write little letters to, you know, to the families on the island. It was so sweet. It was so sweet. That was just something. It helped them and it helped us too, you know.
There's so much agency to teach your children. I should give the listeners a bit of a backstory. Fiona and I know each other, and if we weren't going to cry on this podcast, there was something wrong with us. Because your mother has been like a second mother to me. And when she listens to this, she will be needing a box of tissues. I just know it. I just know it. Because the empathy that pours out of you, Fi, that's really what comes from this, right? The wisdom as a mother to help lead your children through this. There's no rule book to that, right?
Yeah. No, there isn't, you know. And that whole, how do you take care of yourself? I felt like I had insomnia for, you know, a good month afterwards, because I wanted to put in a brave face for the kids, not to just be lying in a puddle myself. And I needed to lie in a puddle. And I would do that at night, you know, and just cry and talk to my friends and look on Facebook and just share, just be in community with the people who will be displaced. And during the day, you know, just say, okay, how are we, let's explore, how are we going to get through this, you know, with the kids. Yeah, but you dig deep, and I think just mothers and women are just so resilient. We've had to be, right?
Where does it come from for you?
I think there's a long ancestral line of women that I have got a lot to thank, who have all been really strong, determined.
That's in your tissue right now.
That's like my mother, who you know well, and her mother. You know, and when I think of, you know, my dad's grandmother, she was one of the first female doctors in Australia. You know, she built a hospital in the Solomon Islands because there was no care. So these women are just amazing. Yeah, and I think how my mum is so strong and yet so compassionate, that dual.
I think that's the balance that we're fighting as women these days, is to know how do we sit with that? How can we still be that strong but soft and compassionate person, especially in leadership roles or in our relationships, because there's so much of the construct of society that's driving us in a different way.
Yeah, no, there really is. And I think this is the leadership now that we are being called to redefine.
Okay, I love that. How does that work? So if we just look at women for that and the work that you've been doing, what's been showing up for the women and the challenges that they go through at the moment in leadership roles?
There's so much. So many of my, you know, sort of women clients, especially who are mothers, are, I feel like, at the end, on their edge. They're really being pushed to their edge. And it's because they are being called to do all that they bring, but in a system that doesn't support it. So they have the multiple roles. They care so much for their teams, and more and more is being thrown at them. Like, something has to give around just, again, pressing another reset. I don't think the pandemic did enough. I think the working from home probably has helped. And just rethinking about what does a typical workday look like. So there's greater flexibility in that. I think that has helped. But I think just what it means to slow down, to lean in, to provide a duty of care, to your teams, to your customers, to the people that you serve. That pace is still, I feel like we're almost grinding harder to try and overcome the challenges that we're facing in the markets and in society. And I think it's almost, maybe it just needs to continue to get really bad before it changes. I hope that it's not going to get worse, but I'm just feeling people are at their edge. Where I'm seeing women thriving, it's out of the corporate sector. So it's our faith leaders. It's women in the arts. And I have, again, the privilege of working with like artistic directors of, you know, world famous operas and just hearing their journey and finally finding their space and owning it and it being really appreciated and necessary. And I just think the corporate world has a journey still to go on. But when women-owned businesses were able to shape their teams and how they work, I feel like that's where the blooms are. That's where I'm seeing something different showing up. It's these traditional big conglomerates that are still very masculine and patriarchal, where there's a big challenge to shift.
Yeah. And I feel like this conversation is happening more, but it's such a monumental shift, like you said, for it to really change. It has to be something quite big. And I don't know how that happens. Like you said, what is the shakeup that occurs for people to be behaving differently? Because it just comes down to choices and behavior and courage and leadership and connection. I think there's a lot of connection missed in that world, which is what I think is also burning women out. Because if they're not feeling safe, that psychological safety, that's exhausting for the body, trying to manage all these tough relationships and going, this is not actually nice in the first place, but connection and safety.
Yeah. Yeah. No, connection is a key part of it. And it's interesting. I was just working with a woman leader as part of a leadership program. And I was talking about women's circles. And she said, is there one that I can join? And she's also a Black American woman. And she said, I am so alone.
That loneliness in all these industries, but all in our lives, how do we find these safe places? That's why, I mean, I call it a mastermind, what I run. It's just a woman's circle. It really is. It's just, you call it a mastermind to get it, kind of give it the label so people go, oh yeah, that's kind of effective. It's like, it's a safe place for you to learn how to connect with women that are going to listen because we don't need to solve it. I think part of it as well as women is figuring out this beauty of us just being present and the energy of other women helping us. Because when we're in a safe environment like that with other women, our stress hormones go down. That tend and befriend aspect of our nervous system is actually craving that.
It really is. It really is. And right before this call, I was speaking to a colleague about what are the type of women programs that we want to create. And we're in sort of brainstorming that one of the things I was saying that's really important is just coming back to calm, helping women regulate their nervous system, exactly what you're saying. Regulating in order to connect to our truth and connect to what's really important as opposed to trying to live in someone else's world.
And to me, that's embodiment. That's about understanding how do we get into this body. That's one of the biggest lessons, I think, in my experience is how disconnected even in my youth. I was so not in my body. I was so in my head driven. And so when we didn't listen to our gut as women, that's when we often feel this disconnect and the anxiety and the other emotions that come through because we're not actually able to notice this truth, like you're saying, is to feel this embodied cognition when our head and our heart and our gut are speaking to ourselves, speaking, and are we actually listening? It can feel really challenging and brave to actually go within.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. How we get out of our heads and reconnect, you know, the mind-body connection, right? And as much for women as for men too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's because we can speak from our lived experience here, but I work with a lot of men as well that feel disconnected, that feel it's really hard to sit in that feminine side because it's not received as well. So it goes both ways where they feel like they have to armor up and it's so hard for them to show that piece of connection and vulnerability. But the more they do that, that's where the world's going to shift to.
Right, right. No, definitely. And there's, you know, is it man or woman, or is it more about feminine energy?
Yes. You know? Yeah. I love that from your background as well as organizational psychologist. We talk about this. It's like, it's not woo-woo with that. You've got to, it's got to take that layer away, right? Where it's like feminine energy versus masculine energy. It's like, how do you describe it to people? What the difference is in that?
Describe it as just being in touch with your whole self. We all have a heart. We all have emotions. We are actually more emotional than we are mental. That's what picks them first, you know. And I feel like we start to polarize it. That gets in the way. Whereas actually just don't even allow that to enter into the debate. It's about how do we bring our whole self, and that's through vulnerability. So a lot of my work is about helping people be more vulnerable with one another, a lot of storytelling, origin storytelling, to see that there's greater similarity than difference. Everyone can connect with something in each other's story. And it's finding those connection points. And then once we've created a safe space, because we've all been vulnerable with one another, then working sort of, I call it like below the waterline. So if, as a human being, you know, if we're, the behaviors above the waterline, below is our mindset, beliefs, values, drivers, needs. What are some of those outdated either belief patterns or that narrative that we've been conditioned to think? What's not serving us anymore, and how do we reframe it? And not only through cognitively, but somatically, right? So just exactly what you're saying about feeling in our body and working with each other's bodies to try and, you know, connect in order to bring out more wisdom of what's there that isn't being listened to or paid attention to.
And it's the art of listening in to self, but to others that I think really builds that together, looking at the body language, shifting it so they can feel safe. And I think that's been talked about a lot more, psychological safety, physical safety, emotional and social safety. And the more that we can keep sharing that knowledge, that's where others and leaders will be feeling comfortable to step into it.
Our lives were never the same after we learned our 21-year-old daughter, Kristen, was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. It's a parent's worst nightmare. How much did we really know about domestic violence back then? Clearly not enough. Now we know plenty. We know domestic violence, or DV, can happen to anyone. 1 in 3 women suffer physical violence at the hands of intimate partners during their lifetimes. 1 in 3. I'm Bill Mitchell, host of the When Dating Hurts podcast. And my interviews with DV counselors, law enforcement, and especially actual DV survivors give the pandemic of domestic violence the attention it deserves. The When Dating Hurts podcast. It's a series of lives being saved.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries,
so you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, so while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
I know you've also had challenges in work. So how is it for you as a woman stepping up and finding your voice in the workplace?
Yeah. So going back to belief patterns, you know, belief cycles that get in the way, I think an ongoing negative belief cycle I have of mine where I get triggered is need for recognition and need to prove myself. And this comes way back to my dad. That's always what I sought from him, because he had incredibly high standards about how things were done. Double standards, but you know, those were his standards. And I never got the recognition that I sought. Even as I'm 48, I still had a performance review, and a colleague just said to me, she went, really interesting that that's the data point that you're paying more attention to than as opposed to what your clients had said about you, what your colleagues had said about you. I was like, oh my God, it's still there. Still there, it still shows up. And, you know, it was my biggest fear about joining somewhere like McKinsey, which is a really high achieving environment, and it feeds itself. And they employ high achievers. I call them insecure overachievers. I love all my McKinsey friends. If anyone's listening, that is generally the personality type. And the system plays into it, you know, it rewards was exceptional output, but the standard is so high and these people are so bright that no one's ever really going to be able to outdo one another. So they just, you know, it just becomes this huge race, this frenetic, and people burn out. And so I was very worried about how can I create and carve my own path in order to be also a role model for women in an organization like that, which has incredible influence and has a huge platform. We work with some of the most influential leaders in the world. And so if we're not showing up in a way that calls for something new and something different to challenge existing paradigms, then there's a real problem with that. And so that's sort of why I chose to come in and why I still choose to stay. You know, I have to take care of myself. And so just notice when I feel I am being hooked into that cycle and saying, okay, time to pause. My meditation might have gone off track, or since I've come back from holiday, I'm now cycling in the mornings 3 times a week to go and get my coffee and then come back just so I can be outside and have all that matters. I think it's, yeah, taking care of ourselves and also staying really true to my purpose and being very aware of, am I here? Am I doing what I'm wanting to do? And if not, what else do I need to do? Otherwise, no, I need to think about what else.
I know that a big part of what you do is help others find their purpose. What do you define as your purpose?
My purpose is to raise consciousness in leaders and business. And it's very much to help people reconnect to who they are and to each other and to our planet. So in a nutshell, that's how I define it.
And this is the things I'm hearing from you is that what you've used is the self-care, making sure you listen in. How can people get to that point? What's the stepping stones for them to actually move into a place where they move away from that edge of burnout?
I asked somebody, I had a group today, this man was so in his head, and I said, how much time do you make for reflection? And it floored him. He said, actually, no, I don't think I do much of that. He was so overthinking everything. And I just said, you're trying to solve the problem by talking around and around and around it. You just need to pause, go and sit under a tree and take some mindful breathing, you know, like sort of give a simple structure around that and just listen to what comes up. Yeah, that's as a first step, I feel that's, yeah, I mean, there are so many ways, you know, around this, but I think stillness, allowing ourselves to have some stillness in our life and prioritizing and valuing that is a big part of how do we interrupt some of the patterns.
I think that's such a really powerful point for women as well, when we feel like we're juggling everything and then we're the last person to get any time for that stillness. I so resonate with you around this drive for both being seen and for the high achieving and the doing and all the things that go around it. There's a little bit of gratitude to that role, though, that's kind of served me, particularly to get to this point, to do what I'm doing. So there's kind of the good sides of that. But it's, I think what I'm hearing from you is it's seeing how it doesn't have to own you in the future. It's the gratitude for getting to that point and going, right, I can see it coming up. Like you said, 48, belief system coming through and being like, oh, hello there. You're still hanging out. Yeah. And that consciousness around why we react the way we react. And then how does it influence others as well with that?
No, I think that's a really, you know, it's a really important point. How do we not shame or actually even trying to externalize those parts of ourselves that have served us very well to date, right? So there might have been coping strategies. I think mine certainly was, this really has got me in a large part to where I am now. And so honor that. And then, yeah, having a little talk with myself now and then. And I love what you say. You know, I think there's a theme here around integration. Yeah. For all of us really, but especially women, I feel about how are we integrating, because we're being pulled in different directions. So how do we integrate? Because actually technology allows for it now. Our world since the pandemic, the freeing up was, you know, how our work structures and where we need to be, that's been shaken up. So allowing ourselves to be really creative about what parts of my life am I integrating.
And like that, and that time for reflection, that's probably one of the biggest things that, like you said, as a starting point, if people go, I haven't got space, create that space, because that's where the healing and that learning can come from.
Right.
Fiona, for you, what is bravery?
Bravery, I think, is doing the thing that you fear the most. with the hurricane, I had no control over that. I didn't really have a choice other than to kind of power forward. So to me, that's not bravery. Bravery is when you have a choice to do something else, yet you choose the thing that you fear the most.
Thank you for tuning into the Bravery Academy. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you're looking to take your support for the podcast to the next level, visit patreon.com/thebraveryacademy to access exclusive content and get early access to our upcoming episodes. Your feedback means the world to us. So please take a moment to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for being part of the Bravery Academy community. Stay brave, stay curious, and keep challenging yourself to grow. Until next time.